Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 3 issues for just £5. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today. Hello and welcome to The Critic podcast. As we have successfully survived a week in lockdown, we bring you the latest insights from the outside world. This week, Graham Stewart speaks to James Orr, lecturer of philosophy and theology at Cambridge University, about the effects of coronavirus on the church and where faith fits into our pandemic-stricken society.
At a time when people are having to confront all sorts of problems in their lives because of a pandemic that is on a scale that this country has not seen for 100 years, not seen since when, indeed, scarcely anyone living here can remember. And many people naturally turn to God. But where is God? And more specifically, where is the church and the other faiths right now? What is their contribution to helping society get through this time of trial? Well, to discuss the role of the church in the coronavirus crisis in whose grip we find ourselves, I have the pleasure of talking to James Orr. James, you are university lecturer in the philosophy of religion in the Divinity School at the University of Cambridge. A lot of people must be asking you at a time like this, where is God? Is he any less present than he was in previous times when societies have been put to the test?
Well, if God exists, God is who he is. He is outside space and time. He's not surprised by any of this. But of course, the way in which societies make sense of these sorts of disasters and crises in the context of their religious commitments varies enormously and has varied a great deal down the ages. In the case of Christianity, strikingly, panics have led to success stories, really. I mean, thinking of the 3rd century and the 4th century in particular, horrific plagues tore apart the Roman Empire, and it was really the responses of the Christians and the Christian communities that did an extraordinary amount to enhance their credibility and the credibility of their faith. I mean, there's that famous letter of Julian the Apostate, who writes it rather grumpily to one of his officials in Bithynia, I think it was, berating him for not doing enough to help the plague victims, because these impious Galileans were helping not just their own plague victims, but ours as well. And actually, that has been a fairly consistent theme in terms of at least the Christian responses to plagues down the ages. John Donne, of course, famously is Dean of St. Paul's, delivered some extraordinary sermons on mortality and death in the face of pestilence. In the Catholic context, Charles Borromeo was a remarkable figure. And of course, there's been a great tradition of medical missionaries in the last 200 or 300 years, going to those places that no one else would, and bringing help and hope. In fact, I mean, I think Christian organisations did a remarkable job in, though largely unreported, with the Ebola crisis a few years ago. But of course, it is an unprecedented time in the sense that we haven't in living memory faced a crisis like this, and the Christian churches in England and in the UK haven't faced a crisis like this for around about 100 years, I suppose. And so it's very difficult to carp about the leadership of the church at the moment. I mean, these are such tumultuous times. And I think part of the problem is that a lot of the oxygen is just sucked out of the room by the sort of daily reports of panic increases in the mortality rate and so on. So it's been very difficult, I think, for church leaders to get much of a platform.
Well, the British have at least a couple of established faiths in this country. One is the Church of England, the Church of Scotland. The other is the NHS. And at this moment, it is the NHS that is the faith, that is the focus of our hopes, of our worries, our concerns, and also our prospect of salvation. So how does the established church, and the other faiths too for that matter, how does the church compete with that?
Well, with great difficulty, I think. And in part, this is because I think the NHS and public health more generally is a kind of Christianity in the sense that a lot of sort of Christian impulse towards the elderly, the sick, the infirm, the disabled, has been largely internalised and secularised, but within the nation. And I think that's true of the West more generally. So that, as it were, the care that we extend towards those who are ill or are at risk of health difficulties is, as it were, it feels like a natural reflex, but in effect it is something that has emerged over many centuries from a broadly Christian moral universe. Certainly I think that's true for the UK and England, and so it's very difficult for, as it were, the churches to carve out anything, a sort of a distinctive message beyond the sort of usual anodyne messages about social distancing and hand washing and hygiene and so on. But very difficult for that established church to distinguish itself from any other kind of secular, any other kind of secular authority.
Yes, it struck me a moment ago. It struck me when you were describing how in the past hardships and plagues presented an opportunity for the church to embody the hope that God is with us. In such difficult times, there were the priests putting themselves in danger, going about tending to the sick and poor, and often giving them the comfort of the last rites. And so those who suffered could see that the church was with them. It's difficult in this current environment for this to be apparent. I mean, if the Archbishop of Canterbury were to go and give spiritual succour by kneeling with coronavirus sufferers, well, I mean, he'd be breaching clear guidelines, and he'd be told in no uncertain terms to keep a safe distance and to get himself back to Lambeth Palace. You have many of the key milestones of life, baptisms and weddings, where the church plays a central role, suddenly declared unable to take place.
I think that's right, and I think it's been apocalyptic in the technical sense, in this that it's been an unveiling, a disclosure, a remarkably clarifying moment for society, of course, but and for every institution in society, but for the church in particular. And yes, of course, I mean, I take your point that it's not as if the church leadership could have done anything other than get into line with public health recommendations and government recommendations and now edicts. But I think there has been a sense that they've been remarkably quick to get in line with those edicts, and there hasn't been much criticism or complaint. I mean, of course, you know, the public health arguments for shutting down the churches are powerful and not to be gainsaid, but I think there was something quite quick and automatic about the compliance. I mean, for example, I saw very little attempt to query the assumption that a daily walk outdoors is essential for a bit of exercise, but a time of private prayer in a church is not. And it's not to say that the closures are wrong, but there just doesn't seem to be much sort of heartache or hesitation within the leadership over what amounts to the first time churches have been closed down since 1208, when Innocent III issued his edict against St. John. I mean, this is a very big deal historically, to shut down 16,000 churches for an indefinite period. And certainly one can understand it for, you know, large, busy urban churches. But I think, you know, rural churches with very small congregations could have, I think the leadership might have tried to fight for some discretion over how it manages those churches, and managed perhaps even attempts to keep them open, might have attempted to keep them open in a way that was broadly consistent with public health guidelines.
Well, I mean, I notice where I live in Ely, in Cambridgeshire, I mean, it's magnificent 900-year-old cathedral, and its great west doors are shut, padlocked, whereas a few streets away at Ely's secular palace of adoration, Waitrose, an orderly and appropriately spaced queue waits beyond its sliding doors, whilst only a few customers at a time are safely allowed in to go up and down the supermarket aisles. And yet the idea that a smaller number of people might trickle into the cathedral aisle is ruled to be out of the question. So it comes back to your point, I think, about whether the churches were shut too quickly before a way to use them could safely be found, particularly in rural parishes. You know, one or two parishioners with a vicar could gather with suitable distancing. It seems odd that all these shelters of refuge have been shut.
It does, and in fact, that is roughly what happened, that sort of carefully organised and distancing within churches is what happened, as I understand it, in other previous times of plague. And there was a sense that that the church was not optional, that being able to go to church for private prayer, for the Eucharist, to celebrate the Eucharist, was not something that was, as it were, non-essential. And I think that's the last few days and weeks have certainly clarified the non-essential character of physical attendance at church. Now, it's true that Christians haven't always met in church buildings. In the first two or three centuries, they were meeting in underground churches, in private homes and so on. It's not as if that it's part of any kind of creedal or biblical commitment that one meets in a communal building. But it is striking that very little attempt was made to resist or try to find alternative arrangements, as you say, the supermarkets have managed to do. And that I think has been quite striking. Now, of course, the Church of England is, as we know, it's a very broad tent. It spans across many different ways of modes of worship, as it were. And so I think that, you know, some of the big evangelical churches and big urban churches will probably cope pretty well. I mean, a lot of the time their services are broadcast, put onto podcasts and broadcast, if not live, then certainly recorded and up on YouTube or on the website very, very quickly. And I think those that sort of low church expression of Christianity won't be too dented by any of this. But I think those parts of the Church of England, and certainly this will all be true of the Catholic Church too, that include forms of worship where the materiality and sort of physical proximity of the sort of breaking of bread and the sign of the peace and so on is really indispensable, are going to be threatened by these measures. But there's been a fairly sort of collective and quick acceptance of the guidelines and of the non-essential, the governing assumption that attending church on a weekly basis or going for private prayer, even for priests now, as I understand it, priests themselves are barred from celebrating Mass, as it were, on their own, or even for private prayer on their own in their churches. I think that was announced in the last few days. So, yes, I think that the silence is striking.
Well, we are where we are with this, and it may be there are some relaxations in a few months, but assuming the restrictions remain in place for the time being, have you heard about or thought about creative ways by which the church can play a fuller role at this time?
Well, I think a lot of the churches have already been doing what they do very well indeed, and that is to say, providing a face, a human face, to many people in the community who would not otherwise have very much human contact at all. And so, you know, there's been a very laudable emphasis on giving to food banks, on staying in touch with people, trying to organise services remotely. So this has been happening a lot here. I know in Cambridge, the University Church, Great St Mary's, does a sort of a daily prayer and worship online. And I think that many churches are, as it were, being forcibly migrated into the digital space, some much more reluctantly than others. The question is whether further down the line many of these rural churches will reopen, or at least reopen and in a way that ensures, well, in a way that allows life to return to normal. I'm not sure that's clear. But still, you know, so these are very, very difficult times for religious communities, because, you know, Christianity in Britain has never just been about the Sunday services, but the services that are provided on a daily basis to those at the edges of society, whether it's people going through difficult divorces, or pastoral visits are going to, obviously, are going to be heavily restricted for the foreseeable future. And all of the work that the sort of parochial system manages to do very, very well, in fact, I would say better than many rival, as it were, state alternatives, it's going to be a very challenging time, I think. But the response, the focus has been on, as it were, physical health, getting enough food to people. It's not been a case of delivering a